Chapter 13. The line took one pace forwards, winding along one side of the corridor and back down the other. Navarre Hef glanced to his left through the open doorway to see what was going on. The recruits, they weren't allowed to call themselves raptors yet, were filing past Commander Bran. Next to him was Sergeant Nestil with a box covered with black cloth. Each recruit dipped his hand into the box and pulled out a hexagonal nut. Some were black, and some were white. Those who pulled out white nuts sighed and slipped away. Those lucky enough to produce a black nut, about one in three of the recruits, stepped into the room. They were the ones who would be next in line for the transformation. Navarre had seen the new raptors training in the hall. They were an inspiration, more so even than the legionaries that Navarre had looked up to for his whole life. He could remember each and every one of the first nine, when they had been like him just a few weeks ago. Now they were sparring with the legionaries and practicing fire drills with bolters and heavy weapons. It was so close. If Navarre could pick out a black nut, he would be one of the next cadre of recruits to become raptors. The wait was agonizing, taking one step at a time away from the door and then back towards it. When he had turned at the end of the corridor by the double doors that led to the mess, Navarre had realized how close he was to the back of the line. There were fewer than 20 other recruits behind him. His hands were shaking with the excitement and his mouth was dry. There were only 5 more recruits between Navarre and Commander Bran. The next drew out a white nut. Failure. 4 more to go. The recruit who stepped forwards was Navarre's squad leader, a fair-haired youth, a couple of years older than him, called Molo. Navarre could barely breathe as Molo reached into the box, one eye closed as if fearful of seeing what he brought out. It was a black nut.
"Good for you, Molo," whispered Navarre, and received a nod of thanks and wink in return.
"That's it," said Bran, stepping out into the corridor.
"Commander,"
said Navarre, his gut tightening with disappointment.
"That's the next 100, Bran explained. "Go back to your dorms and be ready for training at falling hour."
Bran stepped back into the room and the door clanged shut, leaving the remaining recruits with sagging shoulders and scuffing feet. Navarre felt like he had been kicked firmly between the legs, the knot of ache in his stomach much the same. He hadn't been one of the first 9. He wouldn't be one of the second 100.
"Never mind," said Kale, slapping Navarre on the shoulder from behind. "We might not be the first, but we'll be raptors soon enough. We can wait a week."
A week seemed like an eternity to Navarre. Adjoining the command hall, Korax's control chamber was a square room a dozen meters across, every wall filled with screens and analytical engines. Robe technicians and wheezing servitors busied themselves at the consoles, collating the data flow into revolving star maps and ever-changing tables of information. Bran, Agapito, Solaro, and Aloni sat around the glass-topped table at the room's heart, while Korax stood to one side, a portable terminal in one hand. Apart from the others, silent in a corner of the chamber, stood Arcatus, invited out of courtesy by the Primarch. Bran had just finished his report on the transformation of the second intake of raptors. 2 had died during the process. The rest were as impressive as the first wave.
6 says he has created enough gene seed for 2,000 more, though the facilities at Ravendelve only allow us to proceed with implantation on 250 recruits at a time. He has requested that we shift the whole operation back to Ravenspire.
Not yet, replied Korax.
What about the new armor?
Tests are nearly complete, said Bran. The raptors are learning to use the enhanced systems quickly. I've had the first 1,000 suits painted up in Legion livery. We'll need to finalize the squad organization before I can pass on the insignia requirements to the Armorium.
I have drawn up a list of potential sergeant candidates, said Agapito, activating the touchpad on the table in front of him. The raptors may be well prepared, but we'll need to draft in talons for some command experience.
Agreed, said Korax. He glanced at the list. All fine warriors. I leave the final decision up to the 2 of you. Solaro, what is the vehicle situation?
Poor, relatively speaking, said the commander. The Armorium has received 3 shipments from Kievar since we returned, mostly rhinos, but we're woefully light on heavier armor. Whatever you plan to do to get back at Horus, I hope you don't have a tank battle in mind.
It'll be an infantry assault, said Korax.
At a stroke of his hand, an image appeared on the surface of the table of a star map showing the sector around Deliverance. A red circle highlighted a star towards the edge of the display, and the image zoomed in.
Narsis, said Aloni. That's the objective? We've compiled reports from several navigators who have been travelling in the vicinity, explained Korax. While the warp storms are still raging, turbulence around the Narsis system is much reduced, given the world's proximity to several forge worlds, as well as the resources of Agrafa, Chopix, and Spartus. I believe that Narsis will be used by the rebels as a staging post to attack the sector. The perfect fortress, said Bran. The Emperor's children brought Narsis to compliance and built the perfect fortress there. Typical arrogance of Fulgrim, said Aloni. No fortress is perfect. Still, we don't have the heavy materiel for a siege. Nor the time, said Korax. I have a plan for the perfect fortress, but that is not an issue yet. I need to know whether the raptors will be ready for the fight. In theory, yes, said Bran, but they're untested in real battle. Drills and firing ranges are one matter. The fire of war is another. I wouldn't want to pitch them up against the perfect fortress in the first engagement. What about Cruciax? Said Solaro.
He adjusted the table's display so that it veered toward another star system, much closer to Deliverance.
Small moon base in a dead system. It was set up by the Word-Bearers, probably a monitoring station. We can test the raptors and close off one of the traitor's intelligence channels in the sector.
Bran rubbed his chin and studied the schematic, while Korax nodded.
How soon? Asked the Primarch. How many do you want to test? Replied Bran. The first 500, said the Primarch. A proper battle, not some training skirmish. I expect the raptors to fight independently of the Talons, Falcons, and Hawks. They are our first strike formation.
10 days to complete implantation. Another 10 preparing and arming, muttered Bran. Who can say how long it will take us to get there? 15 days at least, given the warp conditions.
Very well, said Korax. You will lead the raptors on a raid against the facility at Cruciax. I will accompany you for the first observation of their performance.
What else do you need to be prepared in time?
Just some sergeants, said Bran, looking at Agapito. Other than that, we've got everything in hand.
I'll have the new squad leaders reassigned and sent down to Ravendelve in the next 2 days, replied Agapito. You'll still need some recon, said Solaro. I can have my squads ready whenever you need them.
We'll rely on orbital data, said Korax. This is just a small engagement. The force will deploy on the Avenger only. No need to risk getting a flotilla scattered in the storms. We hit the Word-Bearers, destroy the station, and withdraw. That is all.
Understood, Lord, said Bran.
Are you sure? Said Korax.
He looked at each of the commanders in turn.
Narsis is our main objective. I want to be ready to launch a full-scale attack on the Emperor's Children garrison within 50 days. We must strike back at the traitors soon.
Have your plans been approved by the Emperor? Asked Arcatus, rising from his seat. What support can you expect?
There has been no meaningful contact with Terra, said Korax. The Emperor granted us autonomy when he allowed us to take the gene tech from the vault. We can expect no other forces for the moment. It's just the Raven Guard, nobody else. I don't know the situation with the other legions, so we can only rely on ourselves.
My custodians will accompany you to Narsis, said Arcatus. If possible, we will secure prisoners from the Emperor's Children for transportation back to Terra.
That is a secondary concern, said Korax. Our primary goal must be the elimination of the perfect fortress and its garrison. It will hamper our enemies considerably if Narsis falls into the hands of those loyal to the Emperor.
It is your command privilege, Primarch, said Arcatus. Remember that though you may fight alone at the moment, there are others who will be waging this war too.
I have not forgotten them, said Korax. It is for them that the Raven Guard will place themselves into the jaws of the beast and draw its bite.
The acid cloud had reduced visibility to less than 100 meters and was already etching strange swirls in the paint of Alpharius's armor. He stepped forwards carefully, avoiding the forming pools of corrosive liquid. Everything in the rad zone was tinged with a ruddy hue, the shadows of the ruined buildings ahead a darker blot against the crimson skyline. The bleeping of the rad detector was insistent but steady, low enough that his suit had not yet started pumping counteractive agents into his bloodstream. The recycled air he breathed was growing a little stale, but was far from intolerable, despite the antiseptic tinge. Stepping over the corroded remnants of a rail track, Alpharius looked to his right, where the rest of the squad was advancing with weapons ready. The envisioned schematic in the corner of his eye showed that they were 750 meters from the Ravendelve beacon, 500 short of the patrol limit. Skirting around a molten heap of slag that had once been a line of rail carts, the squad crossed the cargo yard at a steady pace. Nemron walked a little ahead of the others, bolter in one hand, Auspex in the other. Periodically, he would declare no contacts. The patrol was a standard procedure to ensure that the perimeter of the facility was secure, but with the Raptor's recruitment stepping up, Alpharius had detected a greater sense of importance in the orders of Commander Bran. It was not a good sign, an indicator perhaps that the Raven Guard upper echelons might have heard something about the rebellion Omegon was inciting. The patrol range had been pushed out by 500 meters, covering the outskirts of the desolate transport hub. Another 100 meters further on, the cloud was thickening even further as the squad moved into a depression caused by the subsidence of underground tunnels and hallways. Descending over broken ferrocrete, Alpharius felt something new. There was a small but insistent pressure at the base of his skull, nestled next to the vertebrae in the gap where one of his progenoid glands had been removed. He recognized the cause immediately and took a sharp breath. The microscopic Alpha Legion implant set into his spine had detected an alert broadcast. Somewhere within 100 meters was a Legion transmitter.
"Sweep right. Strafe 50 meters, he said, pushing the rest of the squad away from his line of advance. "Nemron, active scan of that building 70 meters to the right."
Alpharius stayed on his course, opening up a gap between himself and the rest of the legionaries. The ticking sensation in his neck was becoming more distinct. Glancing at the others, he saw them only as half-seen shadows in the corrosive mist, and was sure they could see little of him. He stopped and concentrated on the signal the implant was detecting. He sensed a minor increase in the device's alert tempo as he stepped to his left. Looking around, he saw the remnants of a power pylon, collapsed and folded as if it had been made of wet paper. With one more glance to ensure he was unobserved, he headed towards the pylon, the ticking in his skull becoming quicker and quicker. He made a quick survey of the rubble around the base of the crumpled tower, but could not see any obvious sign of disturbance. He was glad there was nothing to see. He didn't have to have access to the node station to interact with it. Kneeling down, he opened up the access panel in his right forearm and disabled his squad monitor.
"Sergeant, losing your signal,"
came the immediate call from Gallid, the vox link heavy with interference.
"Rad pocket, nothing to worry about,"
Alpharius replied in a measured tone.
"Continue sweep. I will rejoin you shortly."
The Alpha Legionnaire activated the short-range receiver transmitter, a small coil of aerial extruding from the back of his gauntlet.
"Efrit code, Omega-9 Hydra,"
came the electronically muffled voice of the transponder.
"Contact 2, make report, action imminent. Ready yourself for commands." "Efrit code, Hydra 9 Omega," said Alpharius. "Contact 2 understood. New formation designated, the Raptors. Gene tech highly stable. 23 days until first operations of Raptors. Target secure, but ingress route has been established. Ready for orders."
A loud crackle surprised Alpharius, indicating a live link was being established.
"Contact 2, this is Efrit. Confirm status of Raptor development." "Efrit, Hydra Contract 2. Implantation sequence scaled up. Full processing imminent. Estimate return of enemy to military threat within 70 days. Orders?"
There was a lengthy delay until the reply crackled through. Alpharius guessed that his news had required some deliberation for his master to resolve.
"Report understood, Contact 2. Orders to stand by remain."
The link closed with a hiss, and Alpharius retracted the transmitter. He was a little worried by the response. Though it was hard to tell through the layers of tampering, the Alpha Legionnaire thought he had detected hesitancy in Omegon's message, as if he had been taken back by the swiftly moving current of events. There was little Alpharius could do at the moment, and the standby order implicitly instructed him not to make any attempt on the gene tech yet, nor to interfere in or obstruct the ongoing recruitment process. He hoped his Primarch had a plan and was ready to act soon. If not, the Raven Guard would be well on their way to recreating their legion.
Touchdown in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Mark!
The Thunderhawk rocked heavily and a plume of grit and sand billowed up past the port. Bran was already out of his harness and heading towards the assault ramp. The rest of the 30 raptors aboard quickly lined up behind him, their newly painted armor gleaming in the combat lighting, their bolters shining with fresh oil.
"Second strike has crippled Eastern Defense Turret. You are clear for disembarkation,"
announced the pilot. The ramp lowered quickly, filling the interior of the gunship with harsh blue light. Bran's auto-senses filtered out the worst of the glare as he thudded down the ramp and onto a windswept dune.
"Standard dispersal. Coron, take left flank. Nal on the right," snapped Bran.
The raptors fanned out quickly, their armor dark against the light grey desert. One squad split to either side, and the third followed Bran straight ahead. In front of them, the monitoring station squatted beneath a rocky cliff, its flat roof a tangle of communications dishes and sensor arrays. Three missiles streaked down from overhead, detonating towards the western end of the station, to Bran's left. Rockcrete exploded outwards from the bunker busters, showering debris over a sand-choked yard.
"Breach achieved. Third unit moving forwards. Second unit provide fire support," said Bran.
The sand was shifting constantly, making the ground underfoot unstable. The heavy legionaries surged through the drifts in clouds of grey, weapons aimed at the low building ahead. The scream of plasma jets erupted overhead as another Thunderhawk made a pass, its las cannons punching through heavily shuttered windows on the southern face of the station. Downblast from Bran's gunship momentarily swathed the advancing raptors in a storm of grit as it lifted off to take up a covering position above.
"Targets, point 15, third window," snarled Bran,
seeing armoured figures moving at one of the destroyed windows. A moment later, bolter rounds spat from the inside of the building, streaking toward Sergeant Nal's squad. Return fire blazed from Coron's warriors, a hail of bolter shells and plasma blasts. Bran signalled for the squad accompanying him to lay down their own covering fire as Nal and his legionaries pressed on into the defenders' fire.
"Keep them busy,"
said Bran, drawing up his combi bolter. He fired both barrels simultaneously, sending a hail of bolts through the window and into the twisted metal frame around it. The bark of bolters intensified, joined by the thunderous beat of the squad's rotary autocannon wielded by Cavin. The heavier shells of the autocannon ripped out chunks of plascrete from the wall. Bran realized this was the first time he had fired at other warriors of the Legiones Astartes. Like the raptors he led, he had not fought on Istvan, and it was a moment he was proud to share with the new recruits. He wondered if Korax had been even smarter than the commander had realized when he had put Bran in charge of the raptors. Not having shared the experience of the drop site massacre and escape, he had found it hard to relate to the legionaries that had. There was no such divide between him and his new command. This attack was not just to prove the capability of the raptors, it was a chance for him to demonstrate to his brother and the rest of the legion that he was as determined to press this war against the traitors as any warrior who had seen his battle brothers cut down on Istvan V.
"Thermal scans show the enemy are responding in force towards the southern attack,"
Korax spoke slowly and calmly. The Primarch had not joined the attack in person, preferring to observe proceedings from the Avenger in orbit over Cruciax's largest moon. The gas giant itself could just about be seen as a large arc of dark red beyond the jagged line of mountains behind the monitoring post.
"Hold position. Draw fire,"
Bran ordered his companions. They had made great display of their landing and first attack, but theirs was a diversionary assault, designed to bring the word-bearers to one side of the compound. Meanwhile, another force was approaching on the opposite side from atop the cliff, unseen by the defenders. A bolt cracked into Bran's right arm. Splinters of ceramite pattered against his chest and faceplate. He saw that an access door had been opened about 50 meters to his right, from which a squad of red-clad word-bearers was pouring fire into his three squads from the flank. One of Nal's legionaries went down, pitching face first into the sand. Another spun to the ground a second later, arcs of energy crackling from a punctured backpack. Switching his grip to his left hand, the commander fired back with a salvo of 10 rounds. Cavin swung his autocannon onto this new threat before Bran had spoken the order. Autocannon rounds punched into the squad sheltering in the doorway, felling a word-bearer and forcing the others out of sight. Bran glanced at the secondary chronometer display in his visor. 22.03 seconds until the main attack was in place.
"Keep it up! Keep them busy!"
he yelled. The raptors would not be allowed to fall short of the standards demanded by the Raven Guard. He would not be found wanting either. The top of the escarpment was littered with loose rocks, but it did not hamper the legionaries as they bounded across along the slope with long strides. As part of the Ravendelve garrison, Sergeant Dawes' squad had been temporarily attached to the raptors, honorary members it seemed, and so Alpharius found himself descending on the word-bearer's outpost alongside the warriors of the Raven Guard. It was a strange feeling, almost as odd as the sensation he had felt when the Primarch had given the order to open fire at the dropsite ambush. They had been warned then of the plan to back Corus's defiance of the Emperor, but the reality of firing on another legion had quite surprised Alpharius. Far from being shocked by it, he had found it liberating. Decades of being overshadowed by the extravagant exploits of the other legions had built up in him a resentment that he had not acknowledged until the moment he first pulled the trigger. There had been a sense of vindication then, but now Alpharius was feeling more pragmatic. The word-bearers had proclaimed their loyalty so loudly, had spouted their liturgies and oaths so proudly. It was perhaps their rebellion that was the most unseemly and least like true legionaries. Alpharius had always thought they had protested their dedication to the Imperial cause too much, and when he had found out they would be siding with Horus, it had come as no surprise. They were allies, as much as any of the legions that had collaborated to destroy the Emperor's task force, but that didn't mean Alpharius had to like the bombastic, preaching turncoats. He could well imagine them extolling the praises and virtues of Horus as loudly as they had once proclaimed the righteousness of the Emperor. Of all those who had taken part in the massacre, it was the word-bearers he considered the most hypocritical.
"Ready for drop,"
announced Sergeant Dor. They were almost at the lip of the cliff overlooking the facility. 200 raptors and 20 of the former talons surged through the sandstorm. The raptors were a strange sight, with their beaked face masks and new armor, looking the part of hunting birds of prey. Alpharius had already accessed the technical schematics of the new Mark VI armor, and was waiting for the opportunity to upload them to Omegon. It was probably not much of a revelation, considering the tendrils Horus had infiltrated into the Mechanicum, but how much of that information the War Master was willing to share with the Alpha Legion was questionable. A squad to Alpharius's right reached the edge of the cliff first. They carried on, leaping into the swirling sand. Alpharius took a breath and followed, hurling himself into thin air. The roof of the compound was 23 meters below, a distance that posed little problem to a fully armored legionary, even in normal gravity, and that of Cruciax's moon was 2/3 Terran standard. Clouds of dust billowed up as Alpharius thudded into the pitted rockcrete roof. The fiber bundles in his armor bunched as he landed, a sudden flicker of systems reports scrolling past his right eye.
"Melters,"
said Dor, pulling one of the charges from his belt. Alpharius did the same, slapping the melter bomb onto the roof in front of him and setting the timer for 3 seconds. He stepped back half a dozen paces and readied his bolter in one hand while arming a frag grenade in the other. With a white-hot detonation, the melter charge blasted through the rockcrete, creating a hole just over a meter across. Dor's bomb went off half a second later, widening the gap. All around him, the raptors were doing likewise, opening up cracks across the compound. Alpharius tossed the grenade into the opening. He grabbed his bolter in both hands and jumped down through the breach as he heard the crack of the fragmentation charge detonating. Tiles split underfoot from the impact of his landing. There was dust everywhere, the floor littered with shards of rockcrete that crunched as he took a step. The only light came from the breach above, the harsh glare creating a column of blue around him. With a glance in front and behind, he found himself in a short corridor, open archways at each end. He stepped forwards again, aiming ahead as Sergeant Dor dropped into the station. Alfarius swung his bolter to the right as a door opened a little way ahead of him, but he relaxed his finger on the trigger as he recognized the distinctive profile of a raptor in the gloom. The bark of a bolter ahead spurred Alfarius into action. With the rest of the squad thudding down behind them, he and Dor advanced on the archway, five raptors emerging from a side room to join them. A figure appeared at the archway. In the swirl of dust, it was impossible to tell friend from foe, and Alfarius checked his fire. The warrior ahead took a couple of steps closer, revealing a legionary clad in crimson armour. There was something strange about him, a hunched look that unsettled Alfarius. Dor opened fire first, the raptors adding their own salvos an instant later. The word-bearer stumbled backwards out of sight, pieces of armour flying in all directions.
"Come on!" shouted Dor, breaking into a run. "Clear out this room!"
Alfarius followed on his heels, bursting through the archway with his finger already tightening on the trigger of his bolter. He swung the weapon left at a pair of legionaries crouching by the shattered sill of a window. His first blast ripped into the backpack of the closest. The second was aimed higher and crashed into the word-bearer's sculpted helmet. Or at least, that was what Alfarius had first thought. The word-bearer toppled sideways, blood pouring from his shattered skull. What Alfarius had taken as an ornate helm was no such thing. The word-bearer's head was misshapen, a small horn protruding from his brow, canine teeth jutting down to his chin. His skin was bronze-coloured, and the blood that pumped from the hole in his skull was black and thick. Alfarius fired again with a shout of disgust, pulverizing the word-bearer's misshapen head. The other legionary spun around and fired, his burst catching Alfarius in the gut. A cable ruptured, artificial muscle bundles fraying in a welter of white, sustaining fluid. A raptor surged past Alfarius, bolter blazing, opening up a line of bloody craters across the word-bearer's chest. The traitor swung his bolter like a club, but the raptor was too quick, deftly deflecting the blow with his own weapon before repeatedly smashing his elbow into the side of the word-bearer's helm. The raptor hooked a foot behind the traitor's leg and tripped him with another blow to the head. One foot on the word-bearer's chest, the Raven Guard warrior fired, bolt after bolt, punching through the traitor's armour, coating the raptor's greaves with gore.
"Move on,"
said Dor, pointing towards a sealed archway on the opposite side of the chamber. Looking around, there were no Raven Guard casualties. Alfarius counted five dead word-bearers, another of them showing bestial, twisted features, similar to the one he had slain.
"Let's not think about that too much," said Dor,
guessing Alfarius's thoughts from his posture. "According to the pulse survey, there's a reactor two levels down, almost directly below us. Look for a stairwell." It was impossible for Alfarius not to think about what he had seen. There had always been rumours, less than rumours, more fanciful soldiers' tales. Ships had been lost and found, with their complements ravaged by some horrific power. Every legionnaire who had spent time in the warp had a story about a strange dream or discomforting occurrence. Alfarius had half-glimpsed bizarre things on the cusp of wakefulness while in warp transit, and Legion Command had never directly denied that the warp was inhabited. Seeing the contorted faces of the two dead word-bearers reminded Alfarius of those vague dreams, and he wondered just what was happening to the Legiones Astartes who had sided with Horus. Another corridor led them into a mess hall that ran the width of the facility, nearly 70 metres long. A firefight was already raging when they arrived. The air was filled with criss-crossing salvos, bright sparks of bolt propellant and fiery detonations reflecting from steel-topped tables and laminated shelves. The roar of bolters and ring of impacts was deafening. The word-bearers had taken up positions behind overturned tables and in the galley at the far end, and were exchanging fire with two squads of raptors pinned down at a set of double doors opposite Alfarius. A burst of shots greeted Sergeant Dor as he ran into the room, bolter on full automatic fire. He heaved over one of the long bench tables and hunkered behind it, splinters of metal spraying around him, bolt detonations sparking across his armor. Without hesitation, the raptors piled into the hall from behind Alpharius. The first was taken off his feet by a plasma bolt that melted through his chest plate and incinerated his innards. The raptors exacted instant vengeance, blazing away at the plasma gunner, the word-bearer's armor and a glass-fronted cabinet behind him exploding with hits.
"Flank move! Squad 3!"
The order was snapped out by one of the raptors as he bounded up onto a table with a grenade in hand. He lobbed the grenade over the serving counter separating the hall from the galley. A blossom of fire erupted in the heart of the galley, setting off a chain of secondary detonations from ruptured power lines. The black-clad raptors surged down each side of the hall, racing forwards without firing. Two more were sent tumbling by the volleys of the word-bearers, but the dark-armored legionaries pounded on, ignoring their casualties.
"Keep up, old fella!"
One of the raptors laughed at Dor as he sprinted past the sergeant.
"Cheeky bastard!" snarled Dor, powering himself over the fallen table, bolt rounds blasting down the hall from his weapon.
"Support fire!"
Alpharius sidestepped into the hall and squeezed off a salvo of 5 rounds, targeting a word-bearer bringing a plasma gun to bear from behind a trolley stacked with water jugs. The ewers disintegrated into shards and silver slivers, the word-bearer forced to dive out of sight, the fresh red paint of his armor pockmarked by several direct hits. The rest of the squad dashed into the hall and took up firing positions, bolt rounds hammering into the metal counter and tables shielding the word-bearers. The raptors reached the far end of the hall, pulling free combat knives to hurl themselves at the waiting word-bearers. Alpharius saw one of them shredded by the combined fire of 3 traitors moments before his squad brother vaulted over the counter, his bolter firing point-blank into the faceplate of a word-bearer. The raptor slashed his knife backhanded through the throat seal of another, even as his left pauldron shattered in a hail of ceramite fragments from a bolt impact. The word-bearers had not expected the sheer swiftness and ferocity of the raptor's attack. Black-armored legionaries were pouring between the shelves and cupboards of the galley, overwhelming the traitors with bolter and knife. At a word from Dor, the squad started forwards, ready to cover the raptors if they were forced back. There was no need for such caution. Alpharius saw a word-bearer go down, bludgeoned by the bolters of 3 raptors. Another traitor was lifted off his feet and hurled bodily into the power cables exposed by the grenade, sparks and arcs of lightning scorching across his twitching body. The last time Alpharius had seen anything like it had been the world-eater's charge into the salamanders at the drop site. That had been raw carnage on a scale he had never imagined possible. The fight in the mess hall was far less of a spectacle, but the lethal efficiency of the raptors was no less impressive. He pictured the superhumans ahead of him in the colors of the Alpha Legion, tearing through ultramarines or dark angels. There was an irrepressibility about the way they fought, a disciplined fury, coupled with extraordinary speed and precision. And they were just fresh recruits. Alpharius imagined the Alpha Legion descending on Terra with 50,000 such warriors, hardened by previous battles, with a canniness and guile they would learn from the Primarch. That was a force Horus would respect. Suddenly Alpharius realized just how important his mission could become and why he had not yet received orders to destroy the gene tech. This was not about stopping the Raven Guard. This was about strengthening the Alpha Legion. The hall fell quiet, the death cry of the last word-bearer quietly ringing from the steel walls. Alpharius moved into position to secure another doorway ahead, while the raptors moved amongst the traitors, wordlessly ensuring they were all dead with knives to the back of their necks.
"New orders," barked Dor. "The reactor has been set with charges. We're leaving, now. Thunderhawks for extraction at grid 760 and 790. We have 60 seconds. Move."
"That's it," said Alpharius before he could stop himself. "We're done."
"Strike and withdraw, you know the procedure," the sergeant replied. "Mission was to destroy the station. In 50 seconds, we will have been successful."
The raptors needed no repeat of the orders. Squad by squad, they fell back from the galley and across the mess hall. Alpharius retreated, still keeping a wary eye for any counterattack.
"Are the enemy eliminated?" he asked.
"They will be when that reactor explodes," Dor said with a laugh. "No time to hang around."
They withdrew to the corridor along which they had advanced and clambered out of the shattered windows. A stream of black armoured legionaries was pouring back into the sandstorm, disappearing from sight. Alpharius felt grudging respect for the Raven Guard as they melted away as quickly as they had appeared. Forging through the sand drifts, he glanced back, but the facility was now enveloped in the dust storm and obscured from sight. Ahead, his locator locked onto the signal of a descending thunderhawk. Ramp open, the dropship plunged down into a dune, adding to the swirl of sand. The ground shook underfoot just as Alpharius reached the ramp. Stepping aboard the dropship, he turned to see a dark red ball of flame expanding in the hazy distance. Moments later, a violent wind swept the dunes, sending a wall of sand hurtling into the open compartment of the Thunderhawk.
"We're full," the pilot announced over the internal announce system. "Clear the ramp."
Dor dashed out of the cloud and leapt onto the ramp as it started to close, grabbing Alpharius's arm to haul himself into the main chamber.
"Mission complete," Korax announced over the main box channel. "We are victorious. The Raven Guard have shown that they cannot yet be ignored in the battle plans of our foes. The Raptors have proven their worth and earned their first battle honor. The fight against Horus has begun."
Alpharius lowered himself into his seat and pulled on the harness as the Thunderhawk banked sharply. The entire engagement had lasted less than 10 minutes. 10 minutes that might have changed the course of the whole war. There was a jubilant mood at Ravendelve as the last of the shuttles from the Avenger disgorged its cargo of warriors. Even the loss of 14 of their number had not dampened the spirits of the latest Raven Guard recruits, though it was cause for some somber reflection for Bran. The casualty ratio was a little high for his liking, considering the word-bearers could not have numbered more than 50 legionaries against 400 in the main assault. But his concern came from another source. Korax had said little about the operation except for his short victory speech, and had cloistered himself in Bran's command chamber for the trip through the warp, giving the commander no opportunity to voice his doubts. While the raptors were being returned to their dormitories, Bran and Korax travelled back to Ravenspire to report on the mission to the other members of Legion Command. They were waiting in the briefing room when the Primarch and Bran arrived. There was still a large amount of activity going on as Legion attendants gathered as much intelligence as they could regarding Narsis and the Perfect Fortress. Solaro, Agapito and Aloni sat at the table like giant statues amidst the bustle of the command functionaries.
"The outpost at Cruciax is destroyed," Korax announced as he entered the chamber. "The Raptors, whilst a little tactically naive, performed beyond expectation, and the victory signals to me a new beginning for the Raven Guard."
"A 100% success?" asked Solaro.
Korax did not answer, but instead looked at Bran.
"I wouldn't say that," replied the commander of the Raptors, staring right back at his Primarch. "We sustained avoidable casualties."
"They will improve, given experience," said Korax.
"Their exuberance will be tempered."
"They were foolhardy, Lord, not exuberant,"
Bran said, sitting at the table.
"While all combat is a risk, there were many that took unnecessary gambles, and that not only cost valuable lives, it potentially threatened the success of the mission.
If we take them to the Perfect Fortress in that state of mind, they will be slaughtered," said Agapito. "We've been studying what information we have in the archives, and it is a formidable obstacle. I expect the Emperor's children have been further fortifying Narsis since their alliance with Horus. It is no place for rash action."
"The Raptors will only be part of the force," said Korax, frowning with irritation. "You judged them harshly for a little poor discipline during their first engagement. They knew they were being tested and overcompensated in their enthusiasm. I remember you and Bran trying to impress me with your heroics when you were young."
"A good point, Lord," said Agapito.
He looked contrite for a moment, then shook his head.
"But there is a difference between two adolescent prison boys and several companies of transhumans armed and armoured with the best weapons we currently have available. As legionaries, they should impress you with their dedication and discipline, not raw zeal. Attention to duty—"
"You do not think they are ready," snapped Korax.
You sound like one of those word-bearer's chaplains, speaking of empty duty and discipline. We are involved in a war that will decide the fate of the Imperium. I expect every warrior to carry himself with pride and to do his utmost to ensure victory.
There followed an uncomfortable silence for a few seconds as Korax turned away, jaw churning with anger. When he looked at his commanders again, he had calmed himself.
The raptors will learn discipline, he said. In time, when there are more of them, we will be able to spread them through the Legion, as we would any other recruits, and the presence of the veterans will mollify their young spirits. Remember that most of them were little more than children only 100 days ago. Your transformations took years, during which you learned patience and discipline. Bran, if you are so concerned, you must take extra effort to instill such qualities into your warriors, because we don't have the luxury of several years to test their mettle and forge their battle spirit.
Aye, as you wish, Lord, said Bran. A few more turns through the rad waste will calm their humours.
How soon will we move on Narsis, Lord? Asked Solaro. Even with the raptors, we cannot muster more than 5,000 legionaries and other ranks.
I aim to tackle the perfect fortress with twice that number, said Korax. Six and Orlandrias have received instruction to move to the next scale of implantation.
5,000 more raptors, said Agapito, almost horrified by the suggestion. We have no more than 500 novitiates left to implant. Where will you get new recruits?
From Deliverance and Kiavar, said Korax. As I told you before, the new gene seed allows us to take younger and less fitting candidates with equal results.
Forgive any disrespect, Lord, but that does not make sense, said Agapito. Just a moment ago, we were discussing the immaturity of the raptors, who have each been subjected to Legion tradition and teaching for several years already. To take untested boys and turn them into super soldiers seems rash.
There is no alternative, said Korax,
showing no signs of anger at Agapito's criticism.
I understand your concerns, and considered them on the way back from Cruciax. But Horus's treachery has backed us into a corridor with only one way out. Either we turn over raptor production to its full potential, including casting our recruitment wider, or we must give up any desire to strike at Horus's forces. As we are at the moment, it is a simple case of numbers. We don't have them in our favor.
I would like to register my disapproval, said Agapito.
He looked at Korax and then pointedly turned his gaze to Bran with an expression of frustration, bordering on desperation. Bran sympathized with his brother's position, but he had seen firsthand what the raptors could do, even in their inexperience. To have 5,000 such warriors would be an incredible weapon. There was also the question of loyalty to the Primarch. Agapito's strange behavior since Istvan gave Bran cause to doubt his motives for opposing Korax's plan. Perhaps he feared that the Talons would lose honor and prestige. It was certainly the case that the seemingly preferential treatment, the armor and weapons, given to the raptors rankled at Agapito. There was another reason to agree with the Primarch, a far more personal one. The action at Cruciax had not erased the doubts Bran felt about himself for his failings at Istvan. It had proved to him, more than ever, that he needed to redeem himself in the eyes of the Raven Guard who had fought there. A large force of raptors would make him the pivotal commander at Narsis, granting him an opportunity to prove his worth on a stage far more fitting than a raid on an isolated outpost.
It is fitting, said Bran, that we extend the chance to become Raven Guard to as many as possible. We fought a war to liberate the people of this star system so that they might enjoy the benefits of freedom. The Raven Guard prosecuted the Great Crusade across hundreds of worlds to bring that same freedom to others. Now it is time for them to answer our call and repay those efforts with their own.
You're not suggesting conscription, said Solaro.
No, said Korax. I'll not have that. I do not think we will be troubled by a shortage of volunteers.
Word will get out, Lord, said Agapito, gripping the edge of the table tightly. So far we have kept secret our plans and our renewed strength. If you recruit on a scale like this, the news will travel back to the traitors, and they will send a force to exterminate us entirely.
a force we will not be able to resist. Surprise is our greatest asset, and we will surrender it with this sort of declaration."
"It will be too late," said Korax. "We will strike quickly enough that there will be no time for our enemies to prepare. We will begin with the implantation of the remaining recruits at Ravendelve as soon as possible. Bran will organize the mass induction of candidates, and we will make our final preparations for the assault on Narsis."
"What about weapons and armor?" said Solaro. "At the moment, we can make raptors faster than we can manufacture Mark VI suits."
"I already have a manufactorum on Kiavar stepping up production based on the designs brought to us by Captain Norris," answered the Primarch. "As for weapons, we have stockpiles worthy of a legion that was once 80,000 strong. A few thousand bolters are not an issue, despite the losses on Istvan."
"Transportation," said Agapito, with the sigh of a man who knew he had lost a battle. "The Avenger and surviving ships cannot carry that many into battle."
"We will requisition transports from wherever we can," said Korax. "We don't need dedicated assault ships, as long as they can launch Thunderhawks and Stormbirds. Whatever problems you foresee, we will overcome them. The Raven Guard will be prepared to attack Narsis within 25 days. I have waited long enough, and I can wait no longer. The fight back against the traitors has already begun. It is time to accept that and strike a blow that will make them nervous."
"Aye, Lord," said Agapito, his reply echoed by the other commanders. "It will be as you command."
From a vantage point in the irradiated ruins surrounding Ravendelve, Omegon looked at the fortified facility through the magnification of his auto-senses. Contact 3 had been able to transmit from Deliverance warning of a step-up in activity at the Raptor base. Korax was showing no nerves and was plunging headlong into the implementation of his plan, judging by the number of vehicles and shuttles that had been coming and going over the last few days. Mechanicum and Raven Guard attendants in rad suits had been extending the complex with prefabricated buildings, almost doubling its size. He considered his options, none of them with any particular favour. The most obvious course of action would be to signal his operatives to destroy the gene works now, before the raptors could be increased in size. That almost felt like a failure to the Primarch, when his prize was so close at hand. The insurgents were nearly ready to attack Ravendelve, an army of several thousand. 50 Alpha Legionnaires were also only 3 days away, aboard the Beta, hiding out in the dust clouds beyond Kiavar. They would be the spearhead of any assault. It was a balancing act. If he committed too early, without the full involvement of the rebels, his warriors would be cut down to no effect. If he waited too long, the raptors' ever-increasing numbers would prove insurmountable. His only hope lay in a swift, decisive strike to secure the gene tech and then destroy what remained. He needed time, just 10 more days, and everything would be in place to see that plan come to fruition. The scuff of boots on rubble caused the Primarch to turn, his bolter ready. A lean, robed figure picked his way through the debris below. Magos Unithrax. It disturbed Omegon that the tech priest needed no protection against the radiation and pollutants in the air. Looking closer, he saw Unithrax's sallow face had a half-decayed appearance, only the metal implants holding together the flesh beneath his hood.
"I have a solution for you," said the Magos.
He dipped a withered hand into his robe and pulled out a canister the size of a grenade.
"A genetic virus, tailored with the information provided by your operatives. If one of your agents can introduce this to the gene template being used by the Raven Guard, it will halt their expansion."
Omegon dropped down to the ground, rubble grinding to powder beneath his weight. He took the canister from Unithrax and looked at it. It hummed softly with a small stasis field, but otherwise looked like a rations canteen used by the Raven Guard.
"What will it do exactly?" asked the Primarch. "A polluted gene seed is of no use to us." "Exactly," said the Magos.
He coughed uncomfortably and looked away.
"I cannot say exactly what the effects will be, though it will be severe. It will be a simple matter to extricate the virus from the gene strands again once we have them in our possession.
It is a blatant move, and will raise the suspicions of Korax, said Omegon, tossing the canister from hand to hand. They have already increased security at Ravendelve considerably. I cannot afford for them to lock down the whole facility.
They will suspect themselves first, said Unithrax. The virus will mutate the gene seed from within, and it will appear to be an unforeseen side effect of the implantation process. Unless they specifically look for the viral contagion, they will find nothing that cannot be explained by a random but explainable mutation of the genetic material.
I will consider it, said Omegon. What will my agent have to do?
Unithrax produced a small crystal sliver, no larger than a fingernail.
This data chip contains the necessary instructions, he said. Pass it along to your operative with the virus container, and he will be able to access the data through any terminal in Ravendelve. You should also tell him to destroy both the crystal and the canister on completion of the task.
Of course he'll destroy it. We're not amateurs, said Omegon.
He looked at the container again and held out his hand for the data chip. He slipped both into a pouch at his belt and fastened it tight.
How proceeds the work of the Order of the Dragon? Are they in position to act when I give the word? We are ready, said Unithrax. Our supporters have made contact with sympathizers amongst the Kievar hierarchy. When your guild rabble is in a position to reveal themselves, we will put in motion our part of the agreement.
The guilds need only a little more encouragement, and then they will do as I please, said Omegon.
He turned and looked out of a mangled window at the silhouette of Ravendelve and rested a hand on the pouch containing the gene virus. He would have it retrieved by his contact. It would not be long now.